Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
About 5 years ago, we were in New York. In fact, we went to New York to go to the Grammy Awards, and we had an extra night, and I knew who Jackie Mason was because I know he played here in the old days. Some of you remember when he used to play Mr. Kelly's, and you remember him from the early days of television. But then, I don't know, the guy sort of disappeared. And then all of a sudden, he pops up on Broadway, wins a Tony Award just for walking out on a stage and talking to a full house. Not only did he win the Tony Award for that performance, but in addition to that, he has come back, and in fact, he's got a brand new show that he's bringing to Chicago. It'll open at the Schubert Theater. As a matter of fact, he's got a preview performance tonight at the Schubert, and then he will be here nightly and some, I don't know, are there any matinee performances? Well, we'll find out. But anyway, if you've never been to a Jackie Mason concert, here's what it's like.
Now I'm back to my favorite subject, Gentiles. You know, I like to watch the audience, whatever I'm watching. I like to see who's laughing and who isn't. Gives me a guide in terms of what's funny to people. And I always notice the only people who never laugh at my jokes are pseudo-intellectuals who like to consider themselves too cultured to accept these jokes. Too many generalities, stereotypes. Somehow it contradicts their conception of culture to laugh at stereotypes. You know why they say this? Because they're schmucks. Because if this is not culture, if you can't generalize, then you can't study any culture. Culture, by definition, is a generality. If you can't generalize, there's no such thing as the study of culture. What is culture? What is the study of sociology? Is there anything at all? What is sociology? Next. I'm wasting my time with that shit. What is sociology? It's a study of human behavior in a certain time or place in history. Otherwise, there's no such thing as a study of... How did Margaret Mead make a living? How? Is there anything at all that you know?
See, Jackie is looking at some poor schmuck who's sitting in the first row and having a lot of fun. And suddenly this guy that you're looking at, Jackie, and talking to, suddenly starts to smile. And he realizes that what you're saying to him is so universal that everybody in the audience can appreciate it.
Right. That's a perfect description of the whole situation. I couldn't have said it better myself. I'm going to hire you for the job.
No, you won't. This is from a new album.
Pass around what I'm talking about.
This is a new album we just got. It's a new CD. It's called Jackie Mason Brand New. It follows the album from the Tony Award-winning show that I was telling the audience we saw, what, was that about 5 years ago in New York?
That show opened about 5 years ago. It lasted for 2.5 years. That's the longest-running one-man show in the whole history of Broadway.
Whose idea was it for you to go into a Broadway house? Now, let's face it, a lot of our audience can remember you at Mr. Kelly's and the little clubs, the comedy clubs, the jazz clubs that you used to play. But Broadway, 1,400 people.
It was actually the idea was my manager's idea, Jill Rosenfeld. She thought of it because I'd never thought that a one-man show would be such a success. Because I had played every nightclub in America, and audiences seemed to love me. I was getting standing ovations every show. But it wasn't changing my life. It wasn't catapulting me into major money or major stardom. So I was producing pictures that were flopping and TV shows that were flopping. I was desperate to make myself a star, and I kept inventing a new gimmick every week that I produced with my own money and went right into the toilet with it. Everything flopped. And I was one disaster area after another. I was practically available for help from the president, from the welfare department, from everywhere. It was going nowhere. Then all of a sudden, out of desperation, she came up with this idea, maybe you should try a one-man show. I didn't think anybody would show up, but I wasn't busy. It was the difference between either doing the show or sitting in the lobby waiting for a couple of dollars. So I figured I'll take a chance. I had nothing to lose. I didn't want to drive a truck at that time. So I tried it, and I was shocked. 8 minutes later, I was a new kind of a star. I started it in Los Angeles, and every major celebrity and star of the town came out to see me. It got phenomenal raves and reviews, and all of a sudden you would think I was never in show business before. It's like I came from another planet.
Oh,
I didn't recognize myself. I started to wonder, who else is here? Am I the guy they're getting so excited about?
Do you write, is everything in the show what you write?
I never had anybody write anything for me in my life. If somebody offers me a joke, I tell them, do me a personal favor, keep walking.
Really? It's got to be yours.
I don't want to have anybody else's thoughts in my show.
Is any of this written down?
Some of it is written down. If I think of too many funny things all at once, I might write it down for fear that I might forget something. But most of the time, it's just thoughts that come to my mind in an average day from reading, from studying, from watching the news, from talking to people. It's a convergence of everything that I see in life in general. As the world turns, I try to turn with it.
A lady called me yesterday and said, this is the caller saying, we're not Jewish, but should we go to see Jackie Mason? I said, look, I'm not Jewish. I went to see Jackie Mason, and it was one of the funniest things I've ever sat through in my life, because the things that you talk about, well, I love it when you do the... In fact, have we got that bit, the difference between Jews and Gentiles? I want to play that sometime, if we can. Because it's one of the bits that you do, and yet the things that you talk about are universal.
I think Gentiles, as a matter of fact, find me even funnier than Jews because I'm more of a novelty to them. It's for the same reason that white people enjoy black people on television and situation comedies more than black people do.
I hadn't thought of that.
Or vice versa.
Yeah.
A black person is more likely to enjoy a white person more than a white person does because it's more of a novelty to him. He doesn't hear that type of language and that type of expression, that type of personality. It's a kind of a different culture and a different type of approach to life and a different attitude, a different lifestyle. All those differences, why do people travel? And why do people travel? I asked you the same question twice. You didn't seem to notice.
No.
They travel.
He travels because to absorb, right?
because they want to feel and appreciate the difference between their own lifestyle and somebody else's.
That's right.
It's a whole different kind of way of love living, and they want to see what it's all about and appreciate it.
Wow.
And somehow people think that differences make it uncomfortable or make it difficult to relate to. It's exactly the opposite. Those differences make it sometimes that much more interesting.
If you're going to see the Jackie Mason show, say at the Schubert tonight or tomorrow night, and you went back next week, chances are there'd be a little something different, depending upon the mood of the crowd.
I follow the news very carefully, and I have a lot of political sections in my act that I talk about exactly what's happening from day to day, and I study whatever is going on everywhere. So because I like to feel that I have something new to say to people who are watching me, who might have seen me only a month ago, I want them to know that they're going to see something new every time. As a matter of fact, this show is totally different than the first show I did on Broadway. There's not one joke from that first show that you saw 5 years
ago. All right. Well, anyway, tomorrow night is the official opening. There's a preview performance tonight at the Schubert Theater, and Jackie will be here right through Sunday, May the 10th. So you got a few weeks. If you listen very closely now, you can hear another side of, another observation, if you will, from a guy named Jackie Mason.
You know that everybody is amazed at the unbelievable might of the Israeli army. They're amazed at it. Because nobody ever saw a tough Jew anyplace else. Jews traditionally were never fighters. Historically, it's a fact that Jews were never fighters. They were always pacifists. That's why you never see a tough Jew in this country. Did you ever see a tough Jew here? I never saw 4 black people walking in the street and saying, "Watch out, there's a Jew over there." Let's be honest. Did you ever see anybody afraid to walk into a Jewish neighborhood because he might get killed by an accountant?
I'm thinking, Jackie, this is a great bit from your first show.
Right.
And in the same bit, you talk about blacks, you talk about Italians, you talk about Puerto Ricans.
Right.
But do people ever get mad at you?
I never saw anybody get mad, disturbed, nauseous, furious. I'm doing these type of jokes all my life. I never saw anybody get disturbed. The only people I ever saw get disturbed are the people who didn't see the show who asked me about people who could have gotten disturbed. But I never saw anybody get disturbed.
That's wonderful.
I don't remember even getting one complaint about this in my life, and I'm doing this for almost 30 years.
No kidding. Now, is what you're doing right now that much different from what you were doing when you were...
Well, the jokes are always new, but my approach to comedy is the same, but I'm always dealing with new situations, new ideas of whatever is going on at the time. I'm doing jokes now about Clinton or Bush. I certainly couldn't have done jokes about Clinton before. Like I say about Clinton, that he keeps telling a different lie every 5 minutes, and every time he gets caught, he switches to another lie, and then they catch him on this lie, goes to the third one, and then he keeps explaining how it's not really a lie, it was almost a lie, it sounds like a lie, then he says it wasn't even me, it was my brother-in-law, I don't know who they're talking about, I can't remember doing it, I don't remember being in this country, I'm not even a citizen, I don't know what I'm running for, tell me who I am.
You got to go to the Schubert Theater to hear the whole bit. that, I guess. You were going to be, you were a rabbi once, weren't you?
I was
not
a practicing rabbi, yeah.
Well, I mean, from rabbi to comic?
Well, it's not really that big a transition. When people come to a temple, they would rather see hear a few jokes than hear a sermon about something about the Bible. Because the Bible they heard before, and it sounds the same. A new joke is a refreshing experience. People want to hear jokes from rabbis. I find rabbis that are not good entertainers don't last long as a rabbi, because people are not interested in religion when they come to a temple.
Wait a minute, hold it. Let's back up. What was that again?
They go there because they know it's supposedly a religious experience, but they're more interested in other things when they come to a temple. Watch people at a temple or a church. The guy is delivering his great sermon and everybody else is busy. Who's wearing a mink coat they could have bought cheaper? Who has a bad nose, a bad eye job? Who's got a crooked pair of legs? Who's married to the wrong guy? Who's overweight? Whose chin is sagging? Whose nose is fixing?
You obviously then were a funny rabbi.
Well, I was trying to be. And then I realized that as long as I'm going to tell jokes, I could make a lot more money from it on the stage than in a pulpit.
Speaking of stages, Jackie Mason opens tonight at the Schubert Theater. He'll be in Chicago right through the 10th. Luckily, you weren't here last week, but the flood is taken care of. The water is going down.
I know. When I came to the airport, I was greeted by two lifeguards and a swimming instructor.
It's 6 minutes before 11.
When a Gentile walks into a restaurant, he feels very uncomfortable. Hello, may I sit down? How long shall I wait? A year and a half? Why not? You ever see how a Jew walks into a restaurant like a partner? Hello! Every Jew says, let me see my table. No matter which table you show him, you call this a table for a man like me? I don't sit so close to a wall, so far from a window. My wife don't like to face this way, I don't like to face that way. Why is there so many people in this section? They could be moved over here. The Gentiles ate four meals already, and the Jews are picking furniture. Let me see. Takes them 3 hours to pick out a table, then they start a whole new fight. Why is it so drafty here? See Gentiles at a restaurant, if their line doesn't move for a year and a half, they don't care. They keep standing. You don't serve a Jew for a minute. What's taking so long, son? See, Gentiles know nothing about food, so they don't make an issue out of it. They know it's not their field. They don't know nothing about it. So no matter what you serve them, it's better than nothing. They take it. You serve them carrots and peas, they eat carrots and peas because they know it's not their business. And every Jew is an expert. Every Jew knows food. This is his field. You show him carrots and peas. Wait a second. Why is there so many carrots compared to the peas? What happened to the longer carrots, the shorter peas? Ever seen him offer a steak? A Gentile orders a steak. Give it to me medium. Tim, that's close enough. Because he knows it's not his business. No Jew ever said plain medium when he orders a steak. A Jew says, listen, I don't like it exactly medium. I like it between rare and medium. Not exactly between, just a little closer to medium. Not much closer, just a little. That's on this side. On the other side, I'll tell you what, let me go into the kitchen. I'll show you what I'm talking. If you think I'm making any of this up, that I'm somehow generalizing, you ought to go into a Gentile coffee shop compared to a Jewish coffee shop. When I say Jews eat more than Gentiles, it's obviously true. And every coffee shop owner knows it. And it's no accident that if you go into a Gentile neighborhood and you order a piece of cake, it comes out one-tenth the size as it does in a Jewish neighborhood. Go into Wyoming, Montana, Nebraska. You ever order a piece of cake there? Order a piece of cake. It comes out like this. To a Jew, it would be a cookie. You ever go into a coffee shop that's real Jewish, like at the Carnegie Del... Go into the Carnegie Delicatessen and order a piece of cake. It comes out like this. 10 times the size. Gentiles never saw cakes like that. They think it's a birthday party.
Where did you grow up? Did you grow up in a typical Jewish neighborhood?
Yeah, a very heavy Jewish neighborhood on the Lower East Side of New York. I didn't see a Gentile till I was 28. I didn't know they were allowed in this country. I still can't believe they're in the neighborhood.
Other brothers and sisters, big family?
Yeah, a big family. 3 brothers and 2 sisters. My brothers are all rabbis.
And, of course, you were a rabbi, but right. You just kind of discovered that being funny in nightclubs was
a more interesting
story. Was a heck of a lot more fun.
That's right, and a lot more cash.
Jackie Mason opens at the Schubert Theater tonight. He'll be here in Chicago through May the 10th. In the old days, Jackie would play a club like Mr. Kelly's where, what, would you get like 200 people probably at the most?
At the most.
250. Now, you're appearing in front of 1,200, 1,400, 1,500 people. Yeah, did you have to change the approach at all for the,
well,
for the big audience?
Well, there's somewhat of an adjustment you make when there's a huge building and a big crowd. You talk different, you feel different, you act, you project higher, louder, stronger, with a different kind of intensity and expressiveness in front of a big crowd. Like, it's true in general. If you're talking to 32 people, you don't talk like you're talking intimately to one person.
Is it any different? Have you taken the show into, like, Boise, North Dakota?
I've been it in almost every conceivable kind of town in the world. I find that even in the Farmsville areas of America, like in Lake Tahoe, in places like that, and Harrah's in Reno, it was a huge hit. It's a big hit every place. People are not ignorant in those small towns like people like to think. People in big cities think that in small towns they don't know what's going on. But we're all susceptible to the same information. We're all watching and seeing the same things on television and reading the same newspapers. People are just as well informed from one part of the country to the other. It's not like the old days where it was a horse and buggy and the people in the small towns didn't know what's happening.
You mentioned earlier, before the big comeback, or before the one-man show, you had tried your hand at this and that and a lot of things. You tried some television stuff, didn't you?
Yeah, I produced a number of TV shows that didn't go anyplace. I did a lot of shows on all kinds of subjects.
What was that one with Lynn Redgrave? The critics loved it.
The critics loved it, but it caved right in. It was called The Chicken Soup. This is after I became a big hit already. This is only 2.5 years ago.
Yeah.
And it was the first time they had a Jew who really sounded like a Jew with his own personality on television on a major network in 50 years, because they were always too nervous to have a Jewish accent on television. They went through every possible denomination and religion and nationality in the world before they had the nerve to take a chance with a Jew.
Aren't we ready?
They spent their whole lives watching Puerto Ricans, Italians, Greeks, blacks, French, everything in the world on television. But they were afraid to put a Jew on. They thought that, oops, it'll be all over. They'll start shooting Jews in the streets if they hear a Jewish accent.
Come on.
Well, it's obviously true. Do you know if Gentiles did it to the Jews, they would say this is an anti-Semitic society. If the Gentiles control this country, and they were the producers of every network and every show, and they never had a Jew on for 50 years, wouldn't you say it's a terrible wave of anti-Semitism?
Sure you would.
You would think we're in a Nazi country someplace. But when the Jews do it, they say, well, listen, it's a little too Jewish, we can't put it on.
Oh, gee. Well, there is a difference between Jews and Gentiles.
The simple fact is that you are a product of your culture, whether you like to believe it or not. It's no accident that Jews and Gentiles behave differently because they come from different comparative cultures. They even choose different professions. Why do you think when a guy tells me what he does for a living, isn't it amazing how I can always tell if he's a Jew or a Gentile? I can always tell. If a guy is a farmer, could he be Jewish? Who knows a Jewish father? Anybody? A Jew might buy a farm, sell a farm. He does not work on a farm. I never heard anybody say, Chana, is the horse ready? I never heard. You can tell by what people do for a living. Guy tells he's a coal miner. A coal miner is a Gentile. Who saw a Jewish coal miner? Anybody? You ever see a sign? Irving's coal mine? I never heard a guy say, I'm going coal mining, then I'm going to shul for Passover. You ever see a yarmulke with a light attached to it? You can tell by what people do for a living. Let's be honest about it. If a guy tells you he's a mugger, a mugger is a Gentile. There's no Jewish muggers. There never was, there never will be. A Jew can never make a living as a mugger. Because a mugger has to say, give me your money or I'll kill you. If a Jew said that, he'd have to go to a psychiatrist for 30 years. A Jew cannot say, I'll kill you. A Jew would have to say, listen, you don't have to give me all your money. Sit down and wake something out. I didn't say, maybe you got a few dollars now, a few dollars later. We'll make a payment, don't you have anything? We'll give whatever we'll settle for. Doesn't have to be cash. Whatever you got, I did. You see, there are Jewish muggers. That's a lie. There are Jewish muggers, but they're not called muggers. They're called lawyers.
You'll have to go to the Schubert Theater to hear the rest. Jackie Mason will be in town at the Schubert right through May the 10th. Actually, sitting right here in the studio, if you'd like to chat with us. Anne, it's been a great morning, and it's getting funnier all the time.
Yes, right. I agree.
Jackie Mason is here. Did you have a question or a comment?
Yes, actually, a couple of them. I wonder how your three brothers, the rabbis, feel about your success. Are they jealous? And what's your real name?
Well, my real name is Jacob Mazza, M-A-Z-A, and if my brothers are jealous, I really don't know about it because they never told me that they're jealous. It's hard to be jealous when you collect a few dollars every week from this guy.
do they come to see the shows?
They come to all the shows. They love the shows, and they get a big kick out of it. At first, they resented it that I wasn't as religious as they are because it was a holy heritage in my family for every son to be a rabbi, and it was difficult to accept the idea that I wasn't going along the path. But sooner or later, they made peace with it, especially when the money started to come in.
How about your sisters? Are they funny?
My who?
Your sisters, are they funny?
I wouldn't say they're exactly hilarious. I don't go to their shows. But they seem to have a sense of humor. They seem to enjoy what I'm doing.
I'd love to be at one of your family seders.
Well, thank you. It would be my pleasure to invite you. Just for $80, you could do it.
Thanks, Ann.
Thank you.
Richard, you're on the air with us.
Yes, hi. Jackie, I think you're very funny. The crowd, you can really hear them on the tape that they're running there. You're working the crowd very well. You can tell it's quite funny. I just want to see how do you relate to the early Woody Allen material that he did in the 60s when he was doing his stand-up comedy, things like referring to his grandfather. And
I don't think you'll meet any comedian anywhere in the world who wouldn't tell you that Woody Allen is one of the great talents of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Be impossible to find a comedian that doesn't worship the work and the brightness, the imagination, the originality. There's not enough compliments I could give Woody Allen because it's like asking a writer, what do you think of Shakespeare?
Yeah.
He's probably the great comedy mind of our time.
Remember that? You seem to be familiar with his early work, Richard. And Jackie, do you remember the great bit he did about the moose? It's one of,
yes.
To me, it's a classic stand-up bit.
He shot a moose.
Yeah, when he...
Oh, you could pick out classics from Woody Allen all day. He wrote a million classics. Not only the brilliance of his work, but the immensity of the volume of his work.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody who ever lived could write that much comedy in a lifetime.
Right.
As he produces in an hour.
Yeah, well, you got the question answered. All right, Richard?
Thank you.
All right, thanks for calling. Hi, Stuart.
Yes, I'd like to ask Mr. Mason, what do you think of this shock comedy that's on television now, like on the cable? Personally, I don't care much for it.
You're not the only person who doesn't care for it. I don't think anybody over 28 cares for it.
Well, I'm over that.
Aren't we all?
I think you have to have either a demented mind or a very youthful one. And the youthful comedy mind today accepts the things that people who are more mature find impossible to understand or appreciate, because to us it's very offensive and disgusting, and to them it's a way of life. And it's hard for me to say that it's terrible, because there's a whole generation who loves it. And as the world changes, there's different values and standards that happen. I can't say that it's terrible. How could I say it's terrible if they love it? They have a right to enjoy it. It's a free country. It stinks to me because I find it revolting and disgusting. It's a free country, and they have a right to enjoy it. I never condemn anybody for enjoying something just because I find it offensive.
Good for you.
This is a free country. But if you're asking my opinion, I don't understand why filthy four-letter words add up to humor. To me, it just adds up to vulgarity.
No, what I mean, there doesn't seem to be any content to the humor, you know.
But they don't need content. When the whole world always talks clean, and all of a sudden you're talking dirty in itself is a pleasure to them. And hearing it is a great release. And they get entertainment value out of just shocking each other with dirty words, as if to say to the older people, ha-ha, we don't need you. Look how we could live without you, and we don't care if you like it or not. And it's a club, thumbing their noses at the older generation. That's exactly what it adds up to.
Stuart, appreciate the call.
Thank you very much.
Gave Jackie a chance. I'm kind of interested in what you would have said in answer to that question anyway. You never worked, there's an old expression, working blue, when you use...
I never in my life used four-letter words.
So.
I never used vulgarity. I never found it necessary to use filthy words to express myself. I think that when people get together and they want to tell each other a funny story, do they have to use four-letter words? people are all the time telling each other funny stories about experiences, about real-life situations. And they watch four people at a table, and they're laughing their heads off at what happened to each other that they find funny in their own personal situations. Nobody has to include four-letter words to be funny. If it's real, and if it's a reflection of life, if it reflects the ridiculousness, life has so many ridiculous predicaments and situations. Anybody who just watched the political situation going right now in America could find a million funny things about it. You don't have to be dirty to find it funny. If you don't find Bush preposterously or hilarious, then there's something wrong with you. All he has to do is show up and I laugh an hour. Because almost everything he says is so idiotic that a normal person can't look at it without laughing. He's for unemployment, he's against unemployment. He's for abortion, he's against abortion. On the same day, he announces he's the education president, he gives nothing for education. Then Clinton says we have to help education. He says, I said it first. Now he's for education. How about money? Wherever we'll get it. Where? I don't know. It's not my field. if you just listen to this and don't find it funny, you got to have something wrong with you.
A little more with Jackie Mason. In fact, a kind of a funny bit. I hope you find that. I think you'll find it funny. And if you really find it funny, Jackie will be performing at the Schubert Theater here in Chicago starting tonight and right through May the 10th. Longest time I think he's ever been. About the longest time he's been in the city in a long while.
In this city, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I was in London with the show for 6 months.
By the way,
I was in Washington for 3 months.
I read somewhere, didn't I read in the paper, when you went over to London, you got an honor, I mean, a great honor given to very few people.
I got the same honor that was given to Mahatma Gandhi and John Kennedy as a special honor from Oxford University. And they turned down a lot of people before they got to me. They turned down my brother-in-law, two cousins.
No, but really, stop and think for
and
a minute.
It was an awesome thing when you consider two Jewish all your life in New York, and all of a sudden the Queen of England and Oxford University.
Ooh.
Oxford University is worshipping me for my English. I'm willing to wonder what kind of language do they talk if this is English.
Jackie Mason, as he mentioned earlier, is an observer, really. The only trouble with you is you remember everything. I mean, I see things, but I forget.
Well, because it's not exactly your business. You don't make it a living out of telling
right.
jokes. So you don't concentrate as intently on it as I do. To me, I'm an intense perfectionist about my work, and I like to make sure I come up with new things all the time. So I'm on some level or other concentrating all the time on what else is happening that I could think of to translate into a joke.
But for instance, I'm going to give folks an example. This is from Brand New, the new CD that Jackie's got out. I mean, here's a guy who could find fun at an intermission. I mean, not many people would find something funny about an intermission.
Right.
But Jackie Mason did.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have a little intermission now. This is too good a show to go straight through. Besides, we have to give the Jews a chance to go into the lobby and discuss the show. See, Gentiles come to watch a show. Jews come to hear their own opinion. That's more important. They're dying to go to the lobby. Here's a yenta going away. God bless you. So I had the decency to say goodnight, Miss. Find out, you must be a German, that Nazi. Are you Jewish, Miss, before you go? Hello? Would you like to convert?
Well, I got to ask you, this, obviously Jackie was just getting ready for intermission, and I presume somebody got up to leave early. What is a yenta?
A yenta means literally a gossipy woman, somebody with a big mouth, but basically it can't be translated in literal terms because it's become a kind of colloquialism. It's used very often affectionately in a way that's not even intended to be in any way derisive. It's like just calling somebody a woman. Sometimes it's even used affectionately, like, oh, you with the big mouth, come here. This is a real yenta. People say it to their mothers, their daughters. It's become like just a popular colloquialism. It doesn't really mean that much.
All right. It's nice to see you still happy and still enjoying life.
As I certainly should be. After all, I'm a very big hit, and I'm glad to help you out. I know a show like yours needs help. I'm glad to come over, do whatever I can to keep you popular. You know, it's not easy to sit in an empty building all by yourself all day.
Jackie Mason.
God bless you. I'm glad you're making a living. I don't know what you do, but whatever it is.
Jackie opens at the Schubert Theater tonight. He'll be in town through May the 10th. Having fun. That's the big thing.
God bless you. Thanks for helping out. The show is a sensation, and it can be an even bigger sensation if everybody shows up. And I will go from house to house and get even with people if they don't come to my show.
And we'll be right back.